This week, the government will set out its latest plan to try and cope with the pandemic. After a series of interviews by the Taoiseach and senior government ministers, it's expected that the revised Living with COVID plan will include a reopening of schools and childcare in March, more vaccines, but a continuation of most of the current restrictions into April and probably longer. Over 4,000 lives have now been lost in the Republic from the virus, most lost in recent months. We'll talk later with Finance Minister Pascal Donoghue, Labour leader Alan Kelly, and from restaurant and hotel groups, whose members heard from the Taoiseach this week that they are unlikely to reopen until mid-summer. And we'll also hear from virologist Dr. Kim Roberts about the discovery of another variant of the virus here. But first to Professor Philip Nolan, Chair of the National Public Health Emergency Team's Epidemiological Modelling Advisory Group. Professor Nolan, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Gavin.
How long do you estimate it will take to reduce the prevalence of the virus to, say, less than 100 cases a day?
I know this is a very frustrating answer to hear, but it is very hard to tell. One of the things that we should start by saying is that the progress in terms of suppressing the virus has slowed, but we're still making progress. So we're at a 7-day average of about 800 cases a day at the moment. A week ago, that was 930. A week before that, 1,050. So we're still making progress. The progress has slowed. It's slowed primarily because of the dominance of the more transmissible B117 variant. If we continue to make progress at the rate we are, we're on track to be below 100 cases sometime in the course of April. So on the one hand, we need to keep going. We need to remain hopeful that we can continue to suppress the virus. But it is going to take time. And it's the reality that it's going to take time that imbues both the advice of NPHET and the approach of government with such high levels of caution.
Will most of the current restrictions then need to remain in place until case numbers fall to double digits?
Yeah, the reality is, I mean, if you think back to October, where we required very restrictive and very strong public health measures to deal with daily case numbers in the region of 1,000, unfortunately, we're still in that region. We're still at very high risk. And we're at very high risk because of the additional transmissibility of the B117 variant. So, yes, the reality is that we are in a position now where we can advise the phased, cautious return to in-class education, because that is such a priority for our society. And from there on in, we're going to have to work through what are our priorities and what are the low-risk, high-return things that we can do over the coming months in terms of the education of our children, the return of non-COVID healthcare. How can we, for the benefit of people's mental health, facilitate some level of safe but increased social contact? And beyond that period of time when case numbers are substantially lower, what are the priority areas of our economy that can resume activity because they're lower risk than other areas of the economy?
What do you think, for example, apart from the reopening of schools and childcare, what do you think could be safely done in April and May, for example, that those restrictions that could first be lifted?
Well, I appreciate not only will people be looking for an answer from me, but they'd be looking for detail in the plan from government. And it's extremely difficult to, in fact, it's inappropriate almost to lay out timelines or numbers, at a number of, at 100 cases per day, we can do X, at 70 cases per day, we can do Y, and that'll happen in early May. And the reason is we simply can't know that. We are, as Cillian de Gascoigne would have said yesterday, dealing essentially with a new virus. The B117 lineage is different from what we were dealing with last year. So both NPHET and government have to really cautiously do things, observe the impact of the increased social mixing associated with those things in the context of the B117 variant, see where we're at that point, and then determine what the next step will be. So, you know, the great adage that no plan survives contact with the enemy. In this case, no plan set out rigidly would survive contact with the B117 variant. So, unfortunately, we're going to have to take this step by step, carefully observing what the impact of each step is, and then judging when it's appropriate and timely to take the next step. All of that said, you know, we are going to focus on what's important to society, what's important to our mental health, the reality that outdoor is safer than indoor, the reality that some level of mixing between households is going to be required for us all to stay sane as we enter the summer, the reality that the plan does set out in its various levels that some sectors like retail and construction are safer than others, so they would be logically first on the list when we're at safer levels of viral prevalence and can consider such things.
Based on your own numbers, the rate at which the case numbers are falling, it would mean that it could take between 9 and 10 weeks before case numbers are brought down below 100, and that would take us into late April or early May. But the reopening of schools that's going to happen in the next few weeks and the increased movement of people that goes with it, and the fact that the type or types of virus that are in circulation at the moment are more transmissible than before, could that mean that it will take longer than that time period to bring case numbers down to a safer level?
It's true that any increased activity, any reopening, so to speak, does carry risks. And I think it's important that, as you did, you distinguish there between the return to in-class education and the possible increased social mixing that would occur on the margins of that. So the first thing that I have to say is that we collectively do have a responsibility to ensure that there isn't a spillover from let's say, the reopening of schools into increased social mixing amongst parents on the margins of that. It's very tempting. It's very possible, but we do have to say to people, you need to be extremely cautious not to offer the virus opportunities to transmit while, essentially, you're bringing your kids to school or on the margins of that activity. But yes, that is the reason why we have to take this step by step, because we're not entirely sure what the impact of any given action will have on the transmission of the virus and case numbers. That said, we need to remember back to the period May and June last year, when it was possible to open up some aspects of social activity and case numbers continued to decline. So there are some activities, particularly outdoor activities, which are lower risk, and there are ways of reducing the risk of indoor activities. And they're the steps that we're going to have to take. What are the low risk, high return activities that we can resume in April, May and June?
And what sort of summer do you think we're looking at here?
I think we're looking at an outdoor summer. If I can be blunt about it, we're looking at a summer where we socialise outdoors as much as we can. We make the most of the outdoors. We continue to limit the number of social contacts we have, but not to as low a number as we have now. Where we holiday and recreate at home. And I do have to say that the vaccination program brings enormous hope. There's a period, you know, the darkest hour is the hour before dawn in some senses. There's a period of great vulnerability where we have to take great care not to spread the virus again as we work through the process of vaccinating the population. But as we vaccinate the population, things will get easier.
Are you encouraged by the fall, for example, in case numbers amongst health workers, most of whom have now been vaccinated, by the reduced rates of fatalities and hospitalisations in the north, where there has been more vaccination, and news coming from Israel about reopening of shops and allowing some crowds to events there now?
Yeah, absolutely. All of those data points confirm the early optimism around the efficacy of these vaccines. These are all exceptionally efficacious vaccines. It's hard for us on this island, because there's so much on, it's hard to dissect out, for instance, for healthcare workers, where I'm not just pleased. I mean, delighted to see the case numbers coming down in healthcare workers, and to understand that they're protected. Some of that is because we have fewer people in hospital. Some is because we have fewer cases in the community, and some is vaccine protection. We'd be able to tell the difference between those three effects. But yes, there is real cause for hope and optimism in those numbers, and in particular in the international numbers.
When we'll be talking more about variants in a few moments with Dr. Kim Roberts. Is it realistic that variants can be kept out of Ireland?
It's realistic that we can greatly reduce the risk of transmitting new variants on the island. But it would be very difficult to completely exclude them. So I think that's again the detection of three Brazilian variants on the island, in one sense, is good news. They were detected and intercepted on their way onto the island, and that tells us that our border surveillance is becoming more and more effective in reducing the risk of transmission. I think that's the way we need to think about it. And it's not just a problem for Ireland, it's a problem for the world as a whole. How do we reduce the circulation of people carrying this infection as much as possible? Because that circulation is not only a way of new variants travelling globally, but it's a way of increasing the risk of new variants. I just want to say one final thing. Variants occur because the virus transmits. So every transmission, every time one person infects another, is an opportunity both for a mutation to occur and for a more successful mutation to win out over its, if it has a transmission advantage. So the way to prevent variants is to suppress transmission. Okay. That's more important than travel.
Professor Philip Nolan, thank you for speaking to us today.